Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of It Depends. We are here to talk about avoiding rework with mockups, specifically low-fidelity mockups. I have with me Ben Robin.
Hello.
Hi, Ben. Brian Langford.
Hello.
And Jesse Brown.
Hey.
We have a Twitter account, at ClearFunction. We use the hashtag ItDepends to talk about this episode. You should check it out. You should ask us questions, talk about the episode. Love to hear from you. All right, Brian, you're the guest of honor today. You're the mock-up man.
The mock-up man. I like that.
Mock-up man.
Nice. It's like so the macho nice man, title. But cooler.
Yeah, much cooler.
I'll be the nacho man. Yeah. So imagine I'm jumping in. I have a four-week project. Someone sold a program with some one-page contract. And we're all going to get it done. And you think, hey, you know, it would be great mock-ups. Quick pitch.
Yeah, so I think doing a mock-up helps... helps everybody because sometimes the client, they may, you know generally what they want. And then as devs, we have to come into that situation and sort of figure it out as we go. And that can be problematic sometimes because we might go down a path of putting together a screen for someone. And then, you know, after the sprint's done or however, whatever process you use, you find out, that's not exactly the picture they had in their head.
Okay.
And so I think, you know, starting with a mock-up can sometimes help alleviate, you know, those kinds of issues. You can immediately, you can do them pretty quickly. So the idea is to do something that you can, you know, without hardly any investment, put down a drawing of some kind and put it in front of the customer to kind of just get a general sense for the direction.
Right. It's like the saying, a picture's worth a thousand words. Like that is, that's true here as well, right? It's just easier to communicate in drawings than it is in speech or writing, right? And it's just, like you said, a lot of it is matching to what the client already has in their head. Like they don't come to you usually not knowing what they want in any way. And so just kind of making sure that you've, you're at least on the same, like, you know, the same ball field, you know, you're like some, you know, you've got the right idea of kind of where they're going because that you don't want to go down that path and then just be wrong and have to do a bunch of rework.
Yep.
I feel like the fundamental reality that we're working in with and through maybe or around sometimes is that regardless of who you are, client or not, educated or not, technical or not, you don't fully know what you want until you see it.
Yep.
And it takes a lot of time sometimes to build the screen that you have in your mind. And so for us to, you know, build it all out technically and make it work, that's a lot of work. But if we could just show you kind of the idea we're headed for, headed towards more specifically with a mock-up, that could save us time in redoing it when you realize, oh, well, that doesn't do what I thought it would do.
Right. Yeah, it kind of cuts down on the surprises too, right? It's and not that you're not going to have any questions or anything comes up. It's just to kind of help mitigate as much as possible any kind of rework that...
Yeah,
none of us want to do so.
Yeah, and I think it's especially important with engineers just because a lot of times you're talking to people who are not engineers, like, you know, Ben was saying, non-technical people, like, you know, they're coming to you and you're just talking at different levels than they care to even think about. And so, I don't know, I feel like engineers, we don't communicate all that well. And so, but everyone understands a picture.
Hey, so, speak for yourself, man. Just kidding. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
The I think another thing with mock-ups, so I guess I think everyone probably knows what mock-ups are, but maybe you should throw a definition of kind of what a mock-up is. And you know, we talked about its purpose a little bit.
Sure. I have a pretty broad definition of a mock-up. It could just be anything from a drawing on a napkin to a whiteboard, potentially even just a whiteboard session you have with a customer, to something on a, you know, on a computer that you're doing in like a digital kind of
version Photoshop, of it. HTML, like
that sort of thing. Probably it would be better if it was digitally, just so that you can keep it and persist it and bring it back up,
change it.
You know, the problem with a napkin is you might use it for your lunch or whatever. It's gone, right? Or whatever. Or, you know, whiteboard, you have to erase it eventually. So, I just sort of view it as any kind of way of either writing down concepts of what you're going to build for the client,
mm-hmm.
In a way that you can kind of walk them through it. So like it might be a series of screens that you're just sort of trying to convey, like, okay, first screen is the login screen. Okay, we all know what kind of login screen will look something like this. And then once you log in, you're going to see a landing page that looks something like this generally. And they don't have to be very detailed. That's the other kind of little, I guess, tip I would give is I wouldn't spend, again, the whole point is not to spend a ton of time on this to make it look pretty. It's just to convey an idea. As a matter of fact, you know, there's some mock-up frameworks out there that they just, instead of having to put like actual text on your mock-up, it'll just be like little squiggly lines just mm-hmm. to say,
right,
hey,
or like the Facebook loaders, sort right. of like the little, like, you know, stuff gray like boxes that. To represent yeah. text and paragraphs and stuff.
So,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's an important thing. You know, historically, the more detailed your mock-ups are, the worse off you are describing how this isn't real. That's right. like that's a huge thing that happens a lot. Because if you come up with some awesome Photoshop, like chances are, if they're not very technical, they're going to think that that is already coded and you're just like a week from shipping it.
Yeah.
And no matter how many times you say that this is a mock-up and not reality, and they'll also get distracted by things that, even if they know it's a mock-up, they'll generally get distracted by things that aren't crucial for what you're actually trying to achieve. Mock-ups normally are, when you, at least in the context we're talking about it, and we're talking about low fidelity mock-ups, is the whole goal is to make sure you're heading down the right path.
Very
right.
tightly scoped.
Yeah, you're
maybe
trying,
we could say extreme mock-ups.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're trying to figure out, just make sure you're going the right direction, right? Yeah. And when they're like, you know, I really want that circle to be a square. You're like, oh, right. okay.
Yeah.
While useful, like, we will make that a square.
Yes.
That's not the goal of the meeting, yeah. right? That's right. not why you're having these. You want them to be fast conversations with, you know, continuous feedback of like, okay, here, I mocked up what the login page looks like, and here's the dashboard, and here's the detail pages. And then if they're like, oh, you know what? I was really thinking that detail needs to be on that first page. You're like, all right, useful information. You know, that's great, and that's what you want. You know,
I'm
you know,
writing
you don't
this down.
Exactly. Right. And you want to be able to, like, okay, I have moved it, to your point, being digital. Yeah. You're like, I have moved more details to the dashboard. Does this jive with what you're thinking? And they're like, yeah, perfect. Or, you know what, maybe it does make sense where you put it the first time. And like, right. that's the sort of conversations you're really after with low fidelity mockups. Right. Not, you know, can this be over here? And like, you know, can we add shadows and, you know, get rid yeah. of, make things flat and iOS?
I think you're yeah. saying this, but I think what I just got out of what you said was the more detailed kind of stuff idea mm-hmm. that we were just talking about earlier. The more conversations the customer's going to have with you about like that detail. So they might say like, oh, we would never put a customer number that had, you know, X, Y, Z, you know, whatever.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
It just, it offers more feedback than you probably want to have at this point.
Right.
So keeping them kind of cartoony looking or, you know,
right.
Not, you know, a little higher level.
Right, it's and high fidelity mockups have their place. Those discussions Absolutely. Need to happen, especially in like greenfield apps. You know, because if you always just show low fidelity and you never kind of get down to the details of like, okay, this column's going to have, you know, the amount that they paid, but if you don't get into like, okay, does it need to be like to show dollars and euros and yen, you know, yen or whatever? And it's mm-hmm. like, if you don't get into that detail eventually, then chances are they don't remember to tell you that that needs to happen.
Right.
And like, so those conversations are very useful, but not in the stage that we're talking about.
Yeah. It sounds like the point is to use as little detail as you can get away with for right. this current need.
Right. Yeah. How do you tease out those requirements other than just having kind of, you know, low fidelity, low quality mockups? You know, how do you, you know, is there certain kind of ways that you mock stuff up to kind of get them to focus on the point that screen is trying to make, you know, for you?
I mean, you mean as far as before showing them a mock-up, like how do we come up with the process of doing that?
Yeah, initially? I mean, yeah. Like, is there a goal in mind for a mock-up? You know, if your goal is to try to figure out what this table should look like or anything, you know, right. Are you making their mock-ups a special way to kind of get them to pay attention to that? Or do you kind of get rid of all the noise around a particular area, or do you just kind of just show it to them?
I actually haven't had I've done a few mock-ups in the past. And most of the ones I've done, I've known at least something about what we're building
right.
To the degree of general requirements.
Right.
And so I've never really run into a situation where I didn't know exactly what it was going to kind of look like, at least in my head. So I try to at least get to that point before I even do a mock-up. Like, I need to at least have a picture.
A good understanding of where you're heading.
Because otherwise I'm going to be kind of all over the place.
Yeah. There certainly are a finite set of, maybe like a list of components or types of screens that we generally see. So you mentioned like a details page.
Right.
Or like a listing page or some kind of report or dashboard. Which, by the way, dashboards are great candidates for mock-ups.
That word is the most overloaded word, like dashboards. Like some people think of like just listing of like, you know, the 10 things that you just entered is a dashboard, and then other people think of like grand huge ideas of like, you know, stats all over the page.
They're thinking of a five-year project, and we've already signed a deal for a two-month project, and you have to find the middle ground quickly.
So like, I mean, I think what you said, Ben, was perfect. It's sort of knowing beforehand, like, am I building a phone app at this point? Because, I mean, that's going to be a more specific-looking kind of screen as far as size, the size of the mock-up I might make and the way it's laid out versus, like, an administrative dashboard web app that somebody's going to log into and administrate or do managing of data. You're going to have some tables in there that's probably going to span most of the screen size to take advantage of screen real estate. Anyway, there's stuff like that I think about, but I usually know at least, you know,
a good
general idea of what we're going to be doing before I start.
So. And I guess in our sort of state of things nowadays, like with CSS, with all the frameworks like Bootstrap and Material and things like that, it could even help a client to see how sort of the micro interactions are going to work. So if you have a site that's going to be mobile responsive and you want to show them what a table looks like on your phone and then it's going to scroll horizontally, they may not be familiar with that, or they may have seen it done in other places. Maybe they want to see a bunch of cards if they have things that could be represented vertically across the phone screen. That could be a great reason to do a mock-up as well.
Yeah, that's think I wonder how often do you have to pull back your kind of designer thoughts and keep it to what you know they have. Like a lot of times when people start mocking up things, they'll be like, all right, and we need a menu up here and it's going to have their gravatar. But like as a developer, I'm always coming from kind of what I know to a mockup. Where like usually when you kind of hire a designer agency, they're kind of going where you want to be and like regardless of time scale. Which is interesting, but like,
if they see
a gravatar and they're like, well, where's the gravatar? You're like, well, your system doesn't have it, and it wasn't ever mentioned that we were going to add it. It was just kind of here's like here's where we want to go sort of thing.
Right. You do have to be careful. I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of the nature of doing design work, you know.
You can create some more accidental work.
You could end up adding a bunch of scope to
if it's aspirational, then
you're like, it'd be really cool if we could break this data out this way. And then you get in there like a month later when you're actually doing the work and you're like, I don't know how to make this data look like this at all. You find new requirements that mean that this doesn't even make sense. Like they approved it, stamp of approval, because they're also, you're kind of convincing them that it makes sense from the mock-ups. And like, if they're not in the, you know, details every day, then suddenly you've got a design that no longer makes sense halfway through the product. And so you've got to gather enough details and to try to make it so that there's not rework, but, you know.
I guess that's sort of the downside of a shared understanding of the basic components of the web, right? I mean, I don't know how many non-developers we have listening to this show, but we all sort of spend a lot of time on Facebook and Netflix, and we expect our web apps to look certain ways as a result. And yet, like you mentioned, like the example of an avatar is a great one. It's not free to be able to upload a picture and save that for a person and show that in you know, various different sizes and shapes and formats. That can get really expensive.
Like, you know, it just been like they may not be hosting anywhere that they have like a bunch of you know, suddenly you're like telling them to spin up AWS accounts and like, you know, you're like, buckets. You're like, oh, like, you know, it's just it's not hard, but it's also not. It's not easy. It's not free, right? And so you don't want to show anything that you think that they're going to just be really into unless you think that they're also willing to kind of make that commitment with you, you know, and say, okay, yeah, let's do that. You know, I think that makes a big difference. It's, you know, have two mock-ups, one with and one without, and be like, here's what we can do today, you know, but we think this really is a great idea. And like, you know.
And it's probably not just the cost in terms of dollars. It's also the cost in terms of time.
Timeline's usually the main factor,
So you probably want to, when you do your mock-ups, want to have some kind of scrutiny, like just even reviewing it with your team before you go in front of the customer, like, hey, Mm-hmm. Can we offer this if I show this?
Right.
Because I don't want to sell them on it if it's something that...
It's going to add like 4 weeks to the timeline. Right. I don't really want to put it in a mock-up to put in front of the client today. Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking that mock-ups could be pretty helpful for developers. If you have like a data layer that you've designed okay and you've got screens in mind, often I'll find myself in a situation where I've got all my back-end components work fine. I'm trying to build out a screen, and I don't really know what's going to be on the screen until I'm done. But if you have that mock-up, maybe you can design a view model. You're like, I'm going to need these 12 elements. This one's going to be a list. This one's going to be a triply nested hash. And when you know all that, just because it's on the screen, you can sort of see the data structure underneath it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't without a mock-up.
I agree. I think it could be very helpful for developers to have a mock-up to go by. What I like about the mock-up is that, especially low fidelity, is that it leaves some creativity left for the developer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to some... Yeah. You know, maybe some developers don't care about the creativity part and just want to just, you tell me where to put the button, I'll put it there. I don't care about the way it looks. You know, just tell me where to put things.
Yep.
But some others, you know, having some input into that where, you know, maybe the look of it or the actual position of it.
Right.
You know, it kind of, the low fidelity can kind of leave it up to them sometimes too. So I hope, you know, my hope is that it's kind of flexible in that way, you know.
Right. Yeah. I remember I worked on this WPF app, a .NET WPF app, a number of years ago, and we were kind of doing a new version of what used to be like an old VB6 program. And so they're like, yeah, we need to do this new version. It's going to be all fancy and have all these animations and everything. And it was financial software, so nothing like too terribly complex, but it was going to be a pretty big facelift. And like the first time we kind of showed the beta to, I guess, like the kind of board investor stuff and everything, they thought it was so real, even though like all the data was fake. Like we didn't really, you know. And so like the next time we had a demo, like before then, I spent some time and found some like a WPF theme that made everything all squiggly.
Yeah,
like, you know,
you
like the windows and everything were all squiggly and everything was like bright white and like all the text boxes were not straight and everything. And it just made the biggest difference the next time, you know, because it's like, oh, is that... So this is just a fake, right? And you're like, yeah, perfect.
Totally,
you know, thank you.
Yes.
It worked out, you know, and they should have known it from the first time, but you know, it's just, it keeps it clear. And then we could just swap it out when we're like ready to actually go to beta, right? You're just like, all right, new theme. And that looks good.
Right.
The same problem is definitely true. Like if you start with the front end, if you build the screen first before you build the back end, I mean, it could be a screen that looks really pretty, but actually does nothing. And you show it in a sprint review and it's like, oh, well, that one's done. No, it actually doesn't do anything.
We're not close to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That'll happen if you build a feature too big before you mark it done and show it off and move to the next small feature.
Well, I figured you were going to say that happens if you start with the screen first, which I know you try not to do.
I don't mind if you do the screen first, but you could have a screen with one thing on it, and that could be your one-day turnaround, and you can add a second thing to it on day two. That'd be pretty cool.
Sounds so extreme.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's a good way of minimizing your work in progress so you don't have too much waste.
We can all only fit so much in our head.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I like starting with the screen. When we're talking about rework, like that's one of the unexpected places where you just save a ton of time is like if you're looking at a screen, it limits which fields you need to bring back from the data layer, and maybe even how you store it, right? Like if the only screens you've seen show it this data in a certain way, and you were planning on kind of in your head just from like a knowing it's coming up in the next week, and you're like, oh, I plan on storing it completely differently. Like you save yourself a ton of time, specifically with like currencies and like, you know, like roll up data and stuff like that. Like, can I aggregate this with the way that I've designed the schema? You know, because sometimes you just don't even know that those reports are coming down the pipeline. So I think, you know, in an agile way, like if you're just kind of knocking out stories, like those showing those mockups early on can help a ton of rework that happens in like the process. Cause you know, even though it's 6 months before this dashboard's going to show up, if you know that dashboard's coming, you can make those decisions ahead of time to make sure that you've got the metrics and the aggregates, you know, available to you by the time you get there.
Yeah. What it's going to look like to the end user sometimes can even determine the shape of the data.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm thinking of the example from this morning. We were going to show two different types of status codes in the same dropdown because from a business perspective, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, that then has an effect on how we store it in the table and what the class looks like, the object looks like in code.
Yep.
Okay, Brian, we've talked about mock-ups in general. I know you've got some favorite mock-up tools. Can you tell us about your go-to?
Sure. The go-to I've been using lately is balsamic mock-ups. It's a reasonably priced tool. I think it's like maybe around $100, maybe a little bit less than that. Recently they came out with their Balsamic Cloud, which is a more collaborative kind of way of looking at mock-ups and working on them. You can have folks log on. You basically just use a browser. You don't have to have a tool downloaded.
Yeah, that's a big thing. That's a big change. That's actually one of the best things they've done, I think, in a long time. You know, I always liked Balsamic mockups when they came out a long time ago, but having the cloud version and being able to share that with clients directly really helps in kind of the remote world where you're not there to walk them through it necessarily, or they want to kind of take their own notes at their own pace after being, shown the mock-ups.
Well, and even across our team, right? I mean, in our case, we're on a current project that Brian and I are both on. He built the mock-ups, and I'm using them to build the screens. It's really helpful on the cloud service.
Yep.
When you saw Brian's mock-ups, did you think the work was already done?
No. Yes. I thought, man, I've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
Just kidding.
Lots of stuff to do.
Yeah,
I like those are good. I mean, if you don't want to make the investment into that, even just PowerPoint or Word doc, where you can just go in there and just draw shapes, more freeform-ish on the screen is helpful. Of course, whiteboards are just as well, too. So, yeah. I mean, Balsamic's great. What I really like about theirs is it's very low fidelity. It looks like a little cartoon that you're kind of drawing.
It's like a napkin, basically.
Yeah.
Squiggly lines.
Squiggly
on
lines.
Background,
Yeah.
So,
since you mentioned whiteboards, just so it's not assumed, but rather stated, that there are maybe a few walls in our office that don't have very large whiteboards on them.
Yep.
And I just don't think that the value of whiteboards can be overstated, I should say. Mm. I use a whiteboard for like everything. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yep.
So I would recommend that if you have not tried that.
Yeah.
And one thing about those tools that Brian mentioned, which is one of the reasons you don't normally just go to Paint, is because those usually have like triggers. So like in PowerPoint, everyone's probably more familiar with PowerPoint. You can kind of make something clickable and go to another page, right?
Like
you can,
or just use your down arrow.
Exactly.
Whatever,
those transitions really help, put together the mock-up of multiple pages, and make it really feel like something. And Balsamic has like actual triggers where you can make this button go to this particular mock-up.
Yep.
And everything. And, and that does really make a big difference instead of just kind of keying through pictures. You know, even PowerPoint, like you can make different like triggers go to separate pages. Yep. Right. And so that it makes it so that you can kind of go back and forward and much like a browser or an app would instead of.
You can kind of present it and talk a bit through like a story, like we start here and then we click here. You can also do alternatives to your mock-up, so you can create all these alternative versions of a particular mock-up in Balsamic, which is kind of neat.
Right, just kind of copy-paste it and saves them kind of together and stuff so that you can just tweak a little bit of it.
That sounds like it's definitely worth some money. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, I had the same feeling working with Visio. Like, I'd been working on Visio on a project for months, and then I was at a new job and I had PowerPoint. Like, I was trying to make PowerPoint be Visio, and it's just not going to happen. I mean, you can draw boxes and arrows, but you're missing the extra two-thirds of functionality that it assumes. You're building diagrams and flowcharts, and you're dragging and dropping, and things are snapping from here to there, and we have implied context, and that's just not there. And it sounds like, you could mock it up on paper or on PowerPoint. It's better than nothing. But if you're doing this regularly on a professional basis, you may as well get a purpose-built tool.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. Well, I think that's all that we have time for today. Where can you find us on Twitter, Ben?
You can reach us at ClearFunction or hashtag itdepends. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by ClearFunction. ClearFunction is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.